Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 9, side 1. Whatever the story was he'd concocted this afternoon to explain the skip ray chase to Thrawn, it would have been designed to protect his own neck, not hers. And if he saw that the Grand Admiral wasn't buying it, he was at perfect liberty to pull his group off Mirker tonight and disappear down one of the other rat holes he had scattered throughout the galaxy. Except that he wouldn't. He would sit there, sending out search party after search party, and wait for Mara to come out of the forest, even if she never did. Even if by doing so he overstayed Thrawn's patience. Mara clenched her teeth, the unpleasant image of Carda pinned against a cell wall by an interrogation droid dancing in front of her eyes. Because she knew Thrawn, knew the Grand Admiral's tenacity and the limits of his patience both. He would wait and watch, or set someone to do it for him, and follow through on Carda's story. And if neither she nor Skywalker ever reappeared from the forest, he would almost certainly jump to the wrong conclusion, at which point he would take Carda in for a professional Imperial interrogation, and eventually would find out who the escaping prisoner had been. And then he'd have Carda put to death. Across from her, the droid's dome rotated a few degrees, and it gave a quietly insistent gurgle. "I think R2's picked up something," Skywalker said, hiking himself up on his elbows. "No kidding," Mara said. She picked up her glow rod, pointed it at the shadow she'd already seen moving stealthily toward them, and flicked it on. A Vornsker stood framed in the circle of light, its front claws dug into the ground, its whip tail pointed stiffly back and waving slowly up and down. It paid no attention to the light, but continued moving slowly toward Skywalker. Mara let it get another 2 paces, then shot it neatly through the head. The beast collapsed to the ground, its tail giving one last spasmodic twitch before doing likewise. Mara gave the rest of the area a quick sweep with the glow rod, then flicked it off. "Awfully good thing we have your droid's sensors along," she said sarcastically into the relative darkness. "Well, I wouldn't have known there was any danger without him," Skywalker came back wryly. "Thank you."
"Forget it," she grunted.
There was a short silence. "Are Carda's pet Vornskers a different species?" Skywalker asked. "Or did he have their tails removed?" Mara peered across the gloom at him, impressed in spite of herself. Most men staring down a Vornsker's gullet wouldn't have noticed a detail like that.
"The latter," she told him. "They use those tails as whips, pretty painful, and there's a mild poison in them, too. At first, it was just that Carda didn't want his people walking around with whip welts all over them. We found out later that removing the tails also kills a lot of their normal hunting aggression."
"They seemed pretty domestic," he agreed, "even friendly." Only they hadn't been friendly to Skywalker, she remembered. And here, the Vornsker had ignored her and gone directly for him. Coincidence?
"They are," she said aloud. "He's thought occasionally about offering them for sale as guard animals. Never gotten around to exploring the potential market."
"Well, you can tell him I'd be glad to serve as a reference," Skywalker said dryly. "Having looked a Vornsker square in the teeth, I can tell you it's not something the average intruder would like to do twice." Her lip twisted.
"Get used to it," she advised him. "It's a long way to the edge of the forest."
"I know." Skywalker lay back down again. "Fortunately, you seem to be an excellent shot." He fell silent, getting ready to sleep. and probably assuming she was going to do the same. "Wish away," she thought sardonically at him. Reaching into her pocket, she pulled out the survival kit's tube of stim pills. A steady stream of the things could ruin one's health in short order, but going to sleep 5 meters away from an enemy would ruin it a lot faster. She paused, tube in hand, and frowned at Skywalker. At his closed eyes and calm, apparently totally unworried face. Which seemed strange, because if anyone had ever had reason to be worried, it was he. Stripped of all his vaunted Jedi powers by a planet full of Isla Amiri, trapped in a forest on a world whose name and location he didn't even know, with her, the Imperials, and the Vornskers lining up for the privilege of killing him, he should by rights be wide-eyed with pumping adrenaline by now. Maybe he was just faking it, hoping she would lower her guard. It was probably something she would try under reversed circumstances. But then, maybe there was more to him than met the eye, more than just a family name, a political position, and a bag of Jedi tricks. Her mouth tightened, and she ran her fingers along the side of the lightsaber hanging from her belt. Yes, of course there was more there. Whatever had happened at the end, at that terrible, confused, life-destroying end, it hadn't been his Jedi tricks that had saved him. It had been something else. Something she would make sure to find out from him before his own end came. She thumbed a stim pill from the tube and swallowed it, a fresh determination surging through her as she did so. No, the Vornskers weren't going to get Luke Skywalker, and neither were the Imperials. When the time came, she would kill him herself. It was her right, and her privilege, and her duty. Shifting to a more comfortable position against her tree, she settled in to wait out the night. The nighttime sounds of the forest came faintly from the distance, mixed in with the faint sounds of civilization from the building at his back. Carda sipped at his cup, gazing into the darkness, feeling fatigue tugging at him as he'd seldom felt it before. In a single day, his whole life had just been turned over. Beside him, Drang raised his head and turned it to the right. "Company?" Carda asked him, looking in that direction. A shadowy figure, hardly visible in the starlight, was moving toward him. "Carda?" Avis's voice called softly. "Over here," Carda told him. "Go get a chair and join me." "This is okay," Avis said, coming over beside him and sitting down cross-legged on the ground. "I've got to get back to Central pretty soon anyway."
"The mystery message?"
"Yeah. What in the world was Mara thinking of?"
"I don't know," Carda admitted. "Something clever, though."
"Probably," Avis conceded. "I just hope we're going to be clever enough to decrypt it."
Carda nodded. "Did Solo and Calrissian get bedded down all right?"
"They went back to their ship," Avis said, his voice scowling. "I don't think they trust us."
"Under the circumstances, you can hardly blame them."
Carda reached down to scratch Drang's head. "Maybe pulling Skywalker's computer logs tomorrow morning will help convince them we're on their side."
"Yeah. Are we?"
Carda pursed his lips.
"We don't really have a choice anymore, Avis. They're our guests."
Avis umphed. "The Grand Admiral isn't going to be happy."
Carda shrugged. "They're our guests," he repeated.
In the darkness, he sensed Avis shrug back. He understood, Avis did, understood the requirements and duties of a host. Unlike Mara, who'd wanted him to send the Millennium Falcon away. He wished now that he'd listened to her, wished it very much indeed.
"I'll want you to organize a search party for tomorrow morning," he told Avis.
Probably futile, all things considered, but it has to be tried.
Right.
Do we defer to the Imperials in that regard? Carda grimaced to himself. I doubt if they'll be doing any more searching. That ship that sneaked out from the Star Destroyer an hour ago looked suspiciously like a stripped-down assault shuttle. My guess is that they'll set up in Hilliard City and wait for Mara and Skywalker to come to them.
Sounds reasonable, Avis said. What if we don't get to them first?
We'll just have to take them away from the stormtroopers, I suppose.
Think you can put a team together for the purpose?
Avis snorted gently.
Easier done than said. I've sat in on a couple of conversations since you made the announcement, and I can tell you that feelings in camp are running pretty strong. Hero of the Rebellion and all that aside, a bunch of our people figure they owe Skywalker big for getting them out of permanent hock to Jabba the Hutt.
I know, Carda said grimly, and all that warm enthusiasm could be a problem. Because if we can't get Skywalker free from the Imperials, well, we can't let them have him alive.
There was a long silence from the shadow beside him.
I see, Avis said at last, very quietly. It probably won't make any difference, you know, in what Thrawn suspects.
Suspicion is better than unequivocal proof, Carda reminded him. And if we can't intercept them while they're still in the forest, it may be the best we're going to get.
Avis shook his head. I don't like it.
Neither do I. But we need to be prepared for every eventuality.
Understood. For another moment, Avis sat there in silence. Then, with a grunted sigh, he stood up.
I'd better get back, see if Gent's made any progress on Mara's message.
And after that, you'd better hit the sack, Carda told him. Tomorrow's going to be a busy day.
Right. Good night.
Avis left, and once again the soft mixture of forest sounds filled the night air.
Sounds that meant a great deal to the creatures who made them, but nothing at all to him. Meaningless sounds. He shook his head tiredly. What had Mara been trying to do with that opaque message of hers? Was it something simple? Something that he or someone else here ought to be able to decrypt with ease? Or had the lady who always played the sabacc cards close to her chest finally outsmarted herself?
In the distance, a Vornsker emitted its distinctive cackle purr. Beside his chair, Drang lifted his head.
Friend of yours? Carda inquired mildly,
listening as another Vornsker echoed the first's cry.
Sturm und Drang had been wild like that once, before they'd been domesticated. Just like Mara had been when he'd first taken her in. He wondered if she would ever be similarly tamed. Wondered if she would solve this whole problem by killing Skywalker first. The cackle purr came again, closer this time.
Come on, Drang, he told the Vornsker, getting to his feet. Time to go inside.
He paused at the door to take one last look at the forest. A shiver of melancholy, and something that felt disturbingly like fear running through him. No, the Grand Admiral wasn't going to be happy about this. Wasn't going to be happy at all. And one way or the other, Carda knew that his life here was at an end.
Chapter 25. The room was quiet and dark. The faint nighttime sounds of Rook Roro floating in through the mesh window with a cool night breeze. Staring at the curtains, Leia gripped her blaster with a sweaty hand and wondered what had awakened her. She lay there for several minutes, heart thudding in her chest. But there was nothing. No sounds, no movements, no threats that her limited Jedi senses could detect. Nothing but a creepy feeling in the back of her mind that she was no longer safe here. She took a deep breath, let it out silently as she continued to listen. It wasn't any fault of her hosts, or at least nothing she could blame them for. The city's leaders had been on incredibly tight alert the first couple of days, providing her with over a dozen Wookiee bodyguards, while other volunteers combed through the city like hairy Imperial walkers, searching for the alien she'd spotted that first day here. The whole thing had been carried out with a speed, efficiency, and thoroughness that Leia had seldom seen even in the top ranks of the Rebel Alliance. But as the days passed without anyone finding a trace of the alien, the alert had gradually softened. By the time the negative reports also began coming in from other Kashyyyk cities, the number of searchers had dwindled to a handful, and the dozen bodyguards had been reduced to three. And now, even those three were gone, returning to their regular jobs and lives, leaving her with just Chewbacca, Rara, and Salperin to watch over her. It was a classic strategy. Lying alone in the dark, with the advantage of hindsight, she could see that. Sentient beings, human and Wookiee alike, simply could not maintain a continual state of vigilance when there was no visible enemy to be vigilant toward. It was a tendency they'd had to fight hard against in the Alliance. As they'd also had to fight against the too often lethal inertia that seduced a person into staying too long in one place. She winced, memories of the near disaster on the ice world of Hoth coming back to haunt her. She and Chewbacca should have left Rook Roro days ago, she knew. Probably should have left Kashyyyk entirely, for that matter. The place had become too comfortable, too familiar. Her mind no longer really saw everything that went on around her, but merely saw some of it and filled in the rest from memory. It was the kind of psychological weakness that a clever enemy could easily exploit simply by finding a way to fit himself into her normal routine. It was time for that routine to be broken. She peered over at the bedside chrono, did a quick calculation. About an hour until dawn. There was a repulsor lift sled parked just outside. If she and Chewbacca got going now, they should be able to get the Lady Luck into space a little after sunrise. Sitting halfway up, she slid across the bed, set her blaster down on the nightstand, and picked up her comlink. And in the darkness, a sinewy hand reached out to seize her wrist. There was no time to think, but for that first half second there was no need. Even as her mind froze, stunned by the unexpectedness of the attack, old self-defense reflexes were already swinging into action. Falling away from her assailant, using the pull on her arm for balance, she swiveled on her hip, tucked her right leg under her, and kicked out with all her strength. The edge of her foot thudded against something unyielding, body armor of some kind. Reaching back over her shoulder with her free hand, she grabbed the corner of her pillow and hurled it at the shadowy outline of his head. Under the pillow was her lightsaber. It was doubtful that he ever saw the blow coming. He was still in the process of scooping the pillow away from his face when the ignited lightsaber lit up the room. She got just a glimpse of huge black eyes and protruding jaw before the blazing blade sliced him almost in half. The grip on her arm was abruptly gone. Closing down the lightsaber, she rolled out of bed and back to her feet, igniting the weapon again as she looked around. And with a sudden, numbing blow to her wrist, the lightsaber was knocked across the room. It shut down in mid-flight, plunging the room again into darkness. She dropped instantly into combat stance, but even as she did so, she knew it was a useless gesture. The first alien had perhaps been lulled by the apparent helplessness of his victim. The second had obviously learned the lesson. She hadn't even turned all the way toward the attacker before her wrist was again captured and twisted around behind her. another hand snaked around to cover her mouth, at the same time jamming her neck hard against the attacker's muzzle. One leg twined somehow around her knees, blocking any attempt she might make to kick him. She tried anyway, struggling to free at least one leg, while at the same time trying to get a clear shot at those eyes with her free hand. His breath was hot on her neck, and she could feel the shapes of needle teeth through the jaw skin pressing against her. The alien's body went abruptly rigid. And suddenly, without any warning at all, she was free. She spun around to face the alien, fighting to regain her balance in the sudden loss of anything solid to lean against, and wondering what this new game was he was playing. Her eyes searched frantically in the dim light, trying to locate the weapon he was surely now bringing to bear on her. But there was no weapon pointed at her. The alien just stood there, his back to the door. His empty hands splayed off to the sides as if preparing to protect himself from a backwards fall. "Mal'ari ush," he hissed, his voice soft and gravelly. Leia took a step backwards, wondering if she could get to the window before he launched his next attack. The attack never came. Behind the alien, the door slammed open, and with a roar, Chewbacca boiled into the room. The attacker didn't turn. He made no move at all, in fact, as the Wookiee leaped toward him, massive hands reaching for his neck. "Don't kill him," Leia snapped. The words probably startled Chewbacca almost as much as they startled her. But the Wookiee's reflexes were equal to the task. Passing up the alien's throat, he swung a hand instead to cuff him solidly across the side of the head. The blow sent the alien flying halfway across the room and up against the wall. He slid down and remained still. "Come on," Leia said, rolling across her bed to retrieve her lightsaber. "There may be more of them." "Not any more," a Wookiee voice rumbled, and she looked up to see Ralra leaning against the doorway. "The other three have been dealt with." "Are you sure?" Leia asked, taking a step toward him. He was still leaning against the door jamb. "Leaning hard against it," she suddenly realized. "You're hurt," she exclaimed, flicking on the room light and giving him a quick examination. There were no marks she could see.
"Blaster?"
"Stun weapon," he corrected. "A quieter weapon, but it was set too low for Wookiees. I am only a little weak. Chewbacca it is who is wounded." Startled, Leia looked over at Chewbacca, and for the first time saw the small patch of matted brown hair midway down his torso.
"Chewie,"
she breathed, starting toward him. He waved her away with an impatient growl. "He is right," Ralra agreed. "We must get you away from here before the second attack comes." From somewhere outside, a Wookiee began howling an alert.
"There won't be a second attack," she told Ralra. "They've been noticed. There'll be people converging on this house in minutes."
"Not on this house," Ralra rumbled, a strange grimness to his voice. "There is a fire 4 houses away." Leia stared at him, a chill running up her back.
"A diversion," she murmured. "They set a house on fire to mask any alert you try to make."
Chewbacca growled an affirmative. "We must get you away from here," Ralra repeated, easing himself carefully upright. Leia glanced past him through the doorway to the darker hallway beyond, a strange dread suddenly twisting into her stomach. There had been 3 Wookiees in the house with her.
"Where's Salperin?" she asked.
Ralra hesitated, just long enough for her suspicions to become a terrible certainty. "He did not survive the attack," the Wookiee said, almost too softly for her to hear. Leia swallowed hard.
I'm sorry, she said,
the words sounding painfully trite and meaningless in her ears. As are we, but the time for mourning is not now. Leia nodded, blinking back sudden tears as she turned to the window. She'd lost many friends and companions in the midst of battle through the years, and she knew that Rauhra was right. But all the logic in the universe didn't make it any easier. There were no aliens visible outside, but they were there. That much she was sure of. Both of the previous teams she and Han had tangled with had consisted of considerably more than 5 members, and there was no reason to expect this one to be any different. Chances were that any attempt to escape overland would meet with a quick ambush. Worse, as soon as the hue and cry over the burning house really got going, the aliens could likely launch a second attack with impunity, counting on the commotion down the street to cover up any noise they made in the process. She glanced at the burning house, feeling a brief pang of guilt for the Wookiees who owned it. Resolutely, she forced the emotion out of her mind. There, too, there was nothing she could do for now. The aliens seem to want me alive, she said, dropping the edge of the curtain and turning back to Chewbacca and Rauhra. If we can get the sled into the sky, they probably won't try to shoot us down.
Do you trust the sled? Rauhra asked pointedly.
Leia stopped short, lips pressed tightly together in annoyance with herself. No, of course she didn't trust the sled. The first thing the aliens would have done would have been to disable any escape vehicle within reach. Disable it, or worse. They could have modified it to simply fly her directly into their arms. She couldn't stay put, she couldn't go sideways, and she couldn't go up, which left exactly one direction.
I'll need some rope, she said, scooping up an armful of clothes and starting to get dressed. Strong enough to hold my weight, as much as you've got.
They were fast, all right. A quick glance between them. You cannot be serious, Rauhra told her. The danger would be great even for a Wookiee. For a human, it would be suicide.
I don't think so, Leia shook her head, pulling on her boots. I saw how the branches twist together when we looked at the bottom of the city. It should be possible for me to climb along between them.
You will never reach the landing platform alone, Rauhra objected. We will come with you.
You're in no shape to travel down the street, let alone underneath it, Leia countered bluntly.
She picked up her blaster, holstered it, and stepped to the doorway.
Neither is Chewbacca. Get out of my way, please.
Rauhra didn't budge.
You do not fool us, Leia Organa Solo. You believe that if we stay here, the enemy will follow you and leave us in peace.
Leia grimaced. So much for their quiet, noble self-sacrifice.
There's a good chance they will, she insisted. It's me they want, and they want me alive.
There is no time to argue, Rauhra said. We will stay together, here or under the city.
Leia took a deep breath. She didn't like it, but it was clear she wasn't going to be able to talk them out of it.
All right, you win, she sighed.
The alien Chewbacca had hit was still lying unconscious, and for a moment she debated whether or not they dared take the time to tie him up. The need for haste won.
Let's find some rope and get moving.
And besides, a small voice in the back of her head reminded her, even if she went alone, the aliens might still attack the house, and might prefer leaving no witnesses behind. The flat, somewhat spongy material that formed the ground of Ruuk Roro was less than a meter thick. Leia's lightsaber cut through both it and the house's floor with ease, dropping a roughly square chunk between the braided branches to vanish into the darkness below. I will go first, Ralra said, dropping into the hole before anyone could argue the point. He was still moving a little slowly, but at least the stun-induced dizzy spell seemed to have passed. Leia looked up as Chewbacca stepped close to her and flipped Ralra's baldric around her shoulders. Last chance to change your mind about this arrangement, she warned him. His answer was short and to the point. By the time Ralra's quiet, all clear, floated up, they were ready. And with Leia strapped firmly to his torso, Chewbacca eased his way through the hole. Leia had fully expected the experience to be unpleasant. She hadn't realized that it was going to be terrifying as well. The Wookiees didn't crawl across the tops of the plaited branches the way she'd anticipated doing. Instead, using the climbing claws she'd seen her first day here, they hung by all fours underneath the branches to travel. And then they traveled. The side of her face pressed against Chewbacca's hairy chest, Leia clenched her teeth tightly together, partly to keep them from chattering with the bouncing, but mostly to keep moans of fear from escaping. It was like the acrophobia she'd felt in the lift car, multiplied by 1,000. Here, there wasn't even a relatively thick vine between her and the nothingness below. Only Wookiee claws and the thin rope connecting them to another set of Wookiee claws. She wanted to say something, to plead that they stop and at least belay the end of their rope to something solid, but she was afraid to make even a sound lest it break Chewbacca's concentration. The sound of his breathing was like the roar of a waterfall in her ears, and she could feel the warm wetness of his blood seeping through the thin material of her undertunic. How badly had he been hurt? Huddled against him, listening to his heart pounding, she was afraid to ask. Abruptly, he stopped. She opened her eyes, unaware until that moment that she'd closed them. "What's wrong?" she asked, her voice trembling. "The enemy has found us," Ralra growled softly from beside her. Bracing herself, Leia turned her head as far as she could, searching the dark pre-dawn gray behind them. There it was, a small patch of darker black set motionlessly against it. A repulsor lift airspeeder of some kind, staying well back out of bowcaster range. "It couldn't be a Wookiee rescue ship, I don't suppose," she offered hopefully. Chewbacca growled the obvious flaw. The airspeeder wasn't showing even running lights. "Yet it does not approach," Ralra pointed out. "They want me alive," Leia said, more to reassure herself than to remind them. "They don't want to spook us." She looked around, searching the void around them and the matted branches above them for inspiration. And found it. "I need the rest of the rope," she told Ralra, peering back at the hovering airspeeder. "All of it." Steeling herself, she twisted partway around in her makeshift harness, taking the coil he gave her and tying one end securely to one of the smaller branches. Chewbacca growled an objection. "No, I'm not belaying us," she assured him, "so don't fall. I've got something else in mind." "Okay, let's go." They set off again, perhaps a shade faster than before. And as she bounced along against Chewbacca's torso, Leia realized with mild surprise that while she was still frightened, she was no longer terrified. Perhaps, she decided, because she was no longer simply a pawn or excess baggage, with her fate totally in the hands of Wookiees or gray-skinned aliens or the forces of gravity. She was now at least partially in control of what happened. They continued on, Leia playing out the rope as they traveled. The dark airspeeder followed, still without lights, still keeping well back from them. She kept an eye on it as they bounced along, knowing that the timing and distance on this were going to be crucial. Just a little bit farther. There were perhaps 3 meters of rope left in the coil. Quickly, She tied a firm knot and peered back at their pursuer. "Get ready," she said to Chewbacca. "Now, stop." Chewbacca came to a halt. Mentally crossing her fingers, Leia ignited her lightsaber beneath the Wookiee's back, locked it on, and let it drop. And like a blazing chunk of wayward lightning, it fell away, swinging down and back on the end of the rope in a long pendulum arc. It reached bottom and swung back up the other direction, and into the underside of the airspeeder. There was a spectacular flash as the lightsaber blade sliced through the repulsor lift generator. An instant later, the airspeeder was dropping like a stone, two separate blazes flaring from either side. The craft fell into the mists below, and for a long moment the fires were visible as first two, and then as a single diffuse spot of light. Then even that faded, leaving only the lightsaber swinging gently in the darkness. Leia took a shuddering breath. "Let's go retrieve the lightsaber," she told Chewbacca. "After that, I think we can probably just cut our way back up. I doubt there are any of them left now." "And then directly to your ship?" Ralra asked as they headed back to the branch where she'd tied the rope. Leia hesitated, the image of that second alien in her room coming back to mind. Standing there, facing her, an unreadable emotion in face and body language, so stunned or enraptured or frightened that he didn't even notice Chewbacca's entry. "Back to the ship," she answered Ralra, "but not directly." The alien was sitting motionless in a low seat in the tiny police interrogation room. A small bandage on the side of his head, the only external evidence of Chewbacca's blow. His hands were resting in his lap, the fingers laced intricately together. Stripped of all clothing and equipment, he'd been given a loose Wookiee robe to wear. On someone else, the effect of the outsized garment might have been comical, but not on him. Neither the robe nor his inactivity did anything to hide the aura of deadly competence that he wore like a second skin. He was, probably always would be, a member of a dangerous and persistent group of trained killing machines. And he'd asked specifically to see Leia, in person. Towering beside her, Chewbacca growled one final objection. "I don't much like it either," Leia conceded, gazing at the monitor display and trying to screw up her courage. "But he let me go back at the house before you came in. I want to know, I need to know, what that was all about." Briefly, her conversation with Luke on the eve of the Battle of Endor flashed to mind. His quiet firmness in the face of all her fears that confronting Darth Vader was something he had to do. That decision had nearly killed him and had ultimately brought them victory. But Luke had felt some faint wisps of good still buried deep inside Vader. Did she feel something similar in this alien killer? Or was she driven merely by morbid curiosity? Or, perhaps, by mercy? "You can watch and listen from here," she told Chewbacca, handing him her blaster and stepping to the door. The lightsaber she left hooked onto her belt, though what use it would be in such close quarters she didn't know. "Don't come in unless I'm in trouble." Taking a deep breath, she unlocked the door and pressed the release. The alien looked up as the door slid open, and it seemed to Leia that he sat up straighter as she stepped inside. The door slid shut behind her, and for a long moment they just eyed each other. "I'm Leia Organa Solo," she said at last. "You wanted to talk to me?" He gazed at her for another moment. Then, slowly, he stood up and reached out a hand. "Your hand," he said, his voice gravelly and strangely accented. "May I have it?" Leia took a step forward and offered him her hand, acutely aware that she had just committed an irrevocable act of trust. From here, if he so chose, he could pull her to him and snap her neck before anyone outside could possibly intervene. He didn't pull her toward him. Leaning forward, holding her hand in an oddly gentle grip, he raised it to his snout and pressed it against two large nostrils half hidden behind strands of hair, and smelled it. He smelled it again and again, taking long, deep breaths. Leia found herself staring at his nostrils, noticing for the first time their size and the soft flexibility of the skin folds around them. Like those of a tracking animal, she realized. A memory flashed to mind. How, as he'd held her helpless back at the house, those same nostrils had been pressed into her neck. And right after that was when he'd let her go. Slowly, almost tenderly, the alien straightened up.
"It is then true," he grated, releasing her hand and letting his own fall to his side.
Those huge eyes stared at her, brimming with an emotion whose nature her Jedi skills could vaguely sense but couldn't begin to identify.
"I was not mistaken before."
Abruptly, he dropped to both knees.
"I seek forgiveness, Leia Organa Solo, for my actions," he said, ducking his head to the floor, his hands splayed out to the sides, as they had been in that encounter back at the house. "Our orders did not identify you, but gave only your name."
"I understand," she nodded, wishing she did. "But now you know who I am?"
The alien's face dropped a couple of centimeters closer to the floor.
"You are the Mal'ari Ush," he said, "the daughter and heir of the Lord Darth Vader, he who was our master."
Leia stared down at him, feeling her mouth fall open as she struggled to regain her mental balance. The right-angle turns were all coming too quickly.
"Your master?"
she repeated carefully.
"He who came to us in our desperate need," the alien said, his voice almost reverent. "Who lifted us from our despair and gave us hope."
"I see," she managed.
This whole thing was rapidly becoming unreal, but one fact already stood out. The alien, prostrating himself before her, was prepared to treat her as royalty. And she knew how to behave like royalty.
"You may rise," she told him, feeling her voice and posture and manner settling into the almost forgotten patterns of the Alderaanian court. "What is your name?"
"I am called Kabarach by our lord," the alien said, getting to his feet. "In the language of the Nogri..."
He made a long, convoluted, roiling noise that Leia's vocal cords didn't have a hope of imitating.
"I'll call you Kabarach," she said. "Your people are called the Nogri?"
"Yes."
The first hint of uncertainty seemed to cross the dark eyes. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.